This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Mexico is one of the deadliest places in the world to be a journalist, with more than 100 having been murdered since 2000. And last year, Mexico led the world in the number of reporters killed outside of war zones. Many of the targeted killings were at the behest of drug cartels or public officials. After death threats, reporter Emilio Gutierrez Soto fled to the United States seeking asylum. He was detained for months by immigration officials. His asylum request was eventually denied, and he was set to be deported to face certain death. Now the deportation order is under appeal. El Paso Congressman Beto O'Rourke joins us to talk about this case and his concerns. Congressman O'Rourke, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
You visited with Emilio Gutierrez Soto in December. What condition is he in?
You know, this is really beginning to wear on him, and his anxiety is not really about himself, but we have to take into consideration that he's also being detained with his son, Oscar. And while Emilio knows that his life is at risk should he be deported back to Mexico, he also knows that Oscar's life is at risk. And as Emilio put it to me, he said, look, I wrote the stories. I did my work as a journalist. I knew what I was doing. I never thought that I would be endangering my son. And so really both of their lives, including Oscar's life, are at stake. And we as a country absolutely have to do the right thing and extend protection to them here in the United States, because returning them to a country where they face the possibility of execution, a country where it is one of the most dangerous in the world to be a journalist, is beneath our dignity as a country. It is not who we are as Texans. And I'm confident we can do the right thing. And I'm grateful that there is some public pressure mounting to help this administration to make the right decision.
What are your what's your understanding of the case now as it stands, and what the outcome could be?
The good news is that the Board of Immigration Appeals has agreed to rehear Emilio's case. It means that there is one more opportunity for him to stay here in the United States, which, by the way, he's been living in peacefully, productively, for the last 8 years, doing no harm to anyone, contributing to the success of the community that he's in, of Las Cruces, New Mexico, which is right next door to El Paso, Texas. So we hold out some hope. I was there originally at the detention center just before Christmas to make an appeal to the detention center director to see if he could extend a humanitarian parole to Emilio and to his son Oscar so that they could return to their home as they await the decision of the board. That request was denied, but at a minimum, at least they're going to get that chance to appeal. And I'm hopeful on the merits of this case, the board returns a decision that allows Emilio and his son to stay here in the U.S. So we hold out some hope right now. That's where things stand.
Unfortunately, the Emilio Gutierrez Soto case does not exist in a vacuum. There's all this connectivity with other things that are happening between the United States and Mexico. Has the government of Mexico adopted a position on this?
You know, this is what makes this case so extraordinarily difficult. Part of the reason that Emilio can't return to Mexico is, as we all know, Mexican law enforcement cannot guarantee his safety, and in some cases, Mexican law enforcement is compromised and are working for people who might want to end Emilio and Oscar's life. So the government of Mexico can't admit that. We're getting no help from the consul general, who himself, I guess, politically is in a compromised position. So this is really one for all of us who care about justice and doing the right thing. And when you talk about the larger context, beyond the violence that we see in Mexico, beyond the absence of rule of law, beyond this administration's deportation first program, you're also dealing with a president who has called the press the enemy of the people and who has tacitly acknowledged or maybe even endorsed violence against members of the media. This is a very dangerous environment for us right now. We absolutely have to stand up for our values, our interests, understand that the press are not the enemy. In fact, they are the best defense against tyranny. And when people like Emilio are allowed to do their job or able to do their job, we're going to have a better country here. We're going to have a better Mexico next door. And it's something that we've got to stand up and fight for.
What would happen if asylum is granted to Emilio Gutierrez Soto? Would other reporters come over seeking asylum, or would other citizens of Mexico come over seeking asylum, saying that the country is dangerous and that this would be a precedent where we'd have to provide that asylum?
You know, I would hope so. If someone's life is in danger, If there is no other recourse, if they have an opportunity to come here to the most powerful, the wealthiest country in the world that has benefited from those who made a choice to flee to the United States, a country comprised of refugees, asylum seekers, and immigrants the world over, I want that to happen. But I will also tell you that for the last 5 years, there's not just been zero net migration from Mexico. There's been less than zero migration from Mexico. More Mexican nationals have left the United States for Mexico than have come north to our country. So I want to make sure that we talk about this question in the context of the larger trends, which show a historic, not just drop in immigration, but reverse migration, folks going back to Mexico. So we absolutely have the capacity, the ability to take care of a very small population of people who are doing extraordinarily important work for that country and, frankly, for this hemisphere.
Congressman Beto O'Rourke, thank you for speaking with us today. And Congressman's also a candidate for Senate from Texas. When we come back, we continue the conversation about reporters in danger in Mexico. Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment, to call in, the number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this quick break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Our topic is press freedom in Mexico, as reporters there are being killed with impunity. What does this mean for Mexico's presidential election in July? What role does this have in the U.S.? What role does the U.S. have in helping journalists there do their job safely? Mexico is just 150 miles from San Antonio. We need to know what's happening in our neighboring nation. Lots of ways for you to get into our conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. You can email questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Tweet us at tpr source, and the number again is 210-614-8980. Our guests are Bill McCarron. He is the executive director of the National Press Club. Margot Ewan is the North American director for Reporters Without Borders. Aaron Nelson joins us. He's a reporter for the San Antonio Express News, Rio Grande Valley Bureau. And so, Bill McCarron, let me ask you, at the National Press Club, what is your understanding of what's happening with the dangers of reporting in Mexico?
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having me. So I would call your listeners' attention to a December 4th report that was issued by the United Nations. They sent David Kay, who's a name people might know. He's done some inspection work in Iraq and other locations. They sent him and a team of people to Mexico, and they interviewed 250 journalists over the course of, I think it was a couple of weeks, and produced a preliminary report with more to come in the spring. And they described some of the pressures that journalists are under, and the violence, both that we see in reporting when there's unfortunately a murder, or intimidation. And it's a chilling report. It's extensive, and I think it's not just in the population centers. They went regionally around Mexico, and I'll just make a quick point about that. It's hard to find a place where a journalist can operate safely, or to say relocate a journalist to a new identity or a new location. Some of which is being suggested could help in Emilio's case, suggested by the courts, let's say.
Margot Ewan with the North American Director for Reporters Without Borders. What are you telling reporters who live in Mexico? Are there like best practices? I mean, what goes on?
Thanks so much for spotlighting this important issue today. So we actually have a representative in Mexico that corresponds with journalists and takes in requests for assistance when journalists feel that they're in danger. We do also a lot of work with the families of journalists who have been murdered in Mexico to try and get the local authorities and the federal institutions to really fully investigate those cases and provide support to them. In that measure, we do provide some sort of assistance, but in the cases of journalists that wish to relocate, we do also assist in that, in those demands, which includes the case of Emilio Gutierrez, But he's unfortunately not the only case that RSF has assisted in terms of seeking asylum in another country like the United States. And so we recognize Mexico as the second deadliest country in the world for journalists. That's after Syria, which is really something that should be concerning to Mexico's government, but also to the international community. And so it really seems like a damning evidence that journalists who are fleeing Mexico for fear of their lives have a real, credible fear, and they should be granted asylum in countries like the United States where they are seeking it.
Aaron Nelson with the San Antonio Express News, Rio Grande Valley Bureau. As you cover the valley, I guess time to time, you do go across and you have contact with reporters. What do they tell you?
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, so when I go to Mexico, I have quite a few Mexican journalist colleagues who I stay in touch with, and I talk to help me navigate through the communities there so that I can try to stay out of danger. And, you know, I think there's a lot that goes unsaid. I think that they operate in a very difficult environment. When they do write about things that are going on related to organized crime or corruption, they are typically from official sources. They stay pretty strictly within those guidelines. And at the times that I've been there reporting on things that are a little outside of that box, my colleagues will kind of warn me that, you know, that's, you're treading in dangerous territory there. And I think one of the things that makes it, at least for somebody like myself, who's not there every single day, is not really knowing what those boundaries are. But yet, Mexican journalists on the border, by and large, self-censor. And that's how they survive.
Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got a comment or question about journalists living in danger in Mexico, trying to do their job, reporting about what's going on in their nation and their cities, and being in, targeted for that. And Larry is on the line. And Larry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
I'd like to, you know, make a couple of comments and then ask a question pertaining to comments. It seems to me that if we indeed have a failed state next door to us, Mexico, and the government and the police and whatever security forces are compromised to that extent, and that journalists feel the need to flee, and in fact, I agree that there is a need for them to get out of there or they're going to get killed, but doesn't that speak to why we need to strengthen our borders and strengthen the system that we have for what gets across and who gets across our border? That's one comment and one question. The second follow-up to that would be, I heard earlier when the congressman was on, he was mentioning that Trump had pointed out the media was the enemy. The average person out here in America land doesn't see it as that, doesn't see that that's what was really said. No one believes that Trump is referring to the media in general. Trump is referring to certain branches and certain aspects of certain media organizations that are obviously, quite obviously, anti-Trump and very left-leaning. And they spin Trump's comments and tweets and anything else that's put out of the White House and the administration as extreme as they can. So that's a little disingenuous to present it that way.
All right, Larry, thank you for the call. Let me go to Bill McCarron. You're the executive director of the National Press Club. To the first point that Larry brought up, if Mexico is so in danger, he called it a failed state. Mexico is not a failed state, but it does have drug cartels and violence and problems. Like any, you know, we have those problems too in our nation. Well, doesn't that mean that we need to have a border wall?
Well, I'm not sure that a wall would solve the problem, but I do think that all people agree that we need to be taking a look at border security issues and what could be done that could be better, more effective. And I think the need, is rising in terms of the reasons people might want to be, people like journalists and activists might want to be leaving Mexico because of political pressure and violence against them. What that means in terms of our overall general immigration policy, I'm not sure. I think you heard the congressman on earlier, and he was talking about the fact that we're in a net negative migration situation now, more people leaving the United States for Mexico than are coming. So there is that. I think we're talking about specific problems to specific classes of professional people, and journalists certainly are feeling that, and we have something to say about that. In general, I think, border security needs a good look. I think all sides agree to that. It's just a question of what form that takes.
And so, of course, Larry did not mention a border wall, but we just heard a soundbite from President Trump in the newscast from NPR earlier, him talking about the need for a border wall to deal with out-of-control crime in Mexico. So those two things are linked. But again, Bill McCarron, because you're the executive director of the National Press Club, what about these comments that to what Beto O'Rourke said earlier about President Trump demonizing the media and the press? And was that disingenuous? Or is the media just picking on Trump? And he's not talking about the entire news media, but just leftist news media, according to the caller, Larry?
It was your caller's opinion. I was glad to hear that, and that's not how he's interpreting the president's comments. But I would say that the president in general, needs to understand that his words matter in terms of policy and what sort of knock-on effect they have. I think you've seen some of the reporting that suggests that around the country, a number of world leaders are now using the term fake news to describe articles that are critical of them. Every article that's critical of the president is not fake news. Most of the articles about the president are not fake news. So I think that's fake news is a significant problem, but it's a different kind of problem than the president's own relations with the press. I understand people feel strongly about their own positions, and how the media does its work is not always easy for people to follow. But I think our press corps here in Washington in general is doing a tremendous job. And so there's very good reporting being done by the Washington Post and the New York Times. It's not all reporting that the White House is going to like or that the president is going to like. That doesn't mean it's fake. It's very high quality.
Now back to Mexico with Margaret Ewan, North American Director for Reporters Without Borders. The president of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto, has pledged that he will do more to protect reporters there. Is that enough?
Absolutely not, given the fact that the remarks that he made pledging more work to be done protecting journalists came before more murders took place at the end of 2017. Reporters Without Borders had noted 11 journalists that were killed that we verified were in relation to their profession as journalists in 2017. And so there seems to be a lack of political will across the spectrum in Mexico in terms of combating this impunity, even though there are four entities within the country that are charged with guaranteeing the safety of journalists, like the Executive Commission for Attending to Victims, the Federal Mechanism for Protecting Human Rights Defenders and Journalists, the Special Prosecutor's Office for Crimes Against Freedom of Expression, and the National Human Rights Commission. However, despite the existence of these mechanisms, there haven't been any meaningful prosecution of any of the murders that occurred in the last year. And of course, there are murders that have occurred in years prior that have also gone unprosecuted. And so the lack of political will is really staggering. And that's, I think, what the report that Bill McCarron mentioned that was issued by David Kay, the Special Rapporteur for Freedom of Expression at the United Nations, highlighted was that there's a true crisis and more pressure must be put on Mexico to really address this issue in a serious and meaningful way. If I just can go back to the to the caller's question, yeah, comments, I want to say that there is actual serious vetting at the U.S. border of anyone who comes in, and asylum seekers have specific requirements that they have to fulfill in order to submit their request for asylum and then get released on parole while they wait for that decision to be judged. They have to prove that they have a credible fear of being killed in their home country and that they pose no risk of running out and disappearing or fleeing and not appearing for court hearings to address their asylum request. Now, the journalist that Reporters Without Borders and the National Press Club have been supporting in these asylum requests have complied with those requirements, and so it's completely unreasonable that that Emilio Gutierrez and his son, for example, remain detained despite the fact that they've been living in the United States for the past 10 years and have never had issues appearing when ICE has ordered them to appear for a deportation hearing or any other hearing associated with the asylum request. And so in that respect, the United States isn't lacking on controlling its border. It's actually not fulfilling its own regulations on how it should treat asylum requests. And on the other point about the, you know, demonizing of the media by the current administration, I agree that there are different angles, different types of media outlets that cover the news in different ways. No matter whether you agree with those points of view or not, if you find them left-leaning or right-leaning, the fact is calling any journalist the media the enemy of the American people is just completely unacceptable for the president of the country of the First Amendment. That shouldn't be levied against anyone. You know, performing journalism is a public service, and if the president's going to take offense every time and a report which is factually based doesn't portray him in a meaningful light by calling journalists the enemy of the American people, then you really have a problem that isn't really in line with the First Amendment.
But in Mexico, with reporters who are being killed, how do we know that they are being killed, Margot, because of them doing their jobs?
So that involves investigation with our team on the ground. So as I mentioned, we have a Mexico correspondent who will look into reported murders of journalists to see if indeed there was a link between their reporting and their death. I can certainly provide some examples of cases that RSF has worked on.
Yes.
The eminent case of Miroslava Breach Valdisea was a 50-year-old reporter for the Norte de Juarez and the La Jornada newspapers, and she was killed in Chihuahua on March 23rd of last year. She was shot several times in her car and died while she was being rushed to the hospital. She actually covered organized crime and corruption, including ties between criminal groups and local politicians. On December 25th, which is very recently, authorities in Mexico actually made an arrest of someone in the neighboring state of Sonora who is considered to be the mastermind behind the murder of Breach. And a few days before his arrest, the alleged perpetrator of the hateful crime was found murdered. So we are following this new development in the case, but we have been working on this investigation with the family of Miroslava for several months and have called for repeated transparency in the investigation and for the Mexican authorities to keep the family in the loop, which they have constantly denied to do or failed to do. And so that is actually a good example of one of those cases, and she was actually the third journalist he murdered in Mexico since the beginning of the year in a series of three murders that took place. The other two murders before her were Ricardo Monluí in Veracruz and Cecilio Pineda Berto in Ciudad Alta Moreno in the southwestern state of Guerrero, another violent state in Mexico. There's also the case of Javi Valdez, who...
Sure, that was a high-profile murder, happened in May of 2017. We'll talk about that more and other problems happening with the journalists in Mexico. They're living in danger, trying to do their jobs. If you've got a question or a comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. You're listening listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Mexico closed out 2017 tied with Syria as the world's most dangerous country for journalists, with 10 reporters murdered during the year. And that's the highest yearly total in its history. Reporters Without Borders is registering a global decline in crimes against reporters. That's around the world. But in Mexico, no, Mexico stood out as the exception with a rising trend for killing. We're talking about that. Also, we're talking about the case of a reporter, a journalist from Mexico, who is seeking refuge in the United States amid death threats. He is facing deportation, and that case is drawing criticism from immigration and journalism advocates. You're invited to call into this conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. And John is on the line. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much, Mr. Davies. I wanted to begin by commending Mr. Nelson, and his writing over the last year has just been spectacular. I feel like his byline is sort of worth the cost of our subscription in the newspaper. But there was one particular story I was so astounded by, how he got the source, the story of asylum seekers who are turned back at our border and then have to cross through cartel-controlled lines and are taking shelter in churches in northern Mexico. And I'd love to hear him describe getting that story and what that's like, and how he gets support from local journalists. And I'm also really curious about alternative media sources in Mexico. A lot of my friends say, you know, we're using Twitter and we're using Facebook and Snapchat, and what that looks like now and what it might look like in the next 5 years. And then also, I'm really curious on how we in San Antonio can be more supportive of media in our border cities and in Mexico in general, if there's things that we can be doing or, various practices that can be more supportive. But again, thank you so much, Mr. Nelson, for your fantastic work. And thanks for this show, Mr. Davies.
All right, John, thanks for the call. So Aaron Nelson, reporter from the San Antonio Express News, Rio Grande Valley Bureau. So how'd you get that story?
So it was shortly after a van that was traveling between Monterrey and Reynosa, headed for Reynosa, had flipped, and it was filled with immigrants, and several of them died in the accident. This isn't completely unheard of in Mexico, I mean, or even really in South Texas. These smuggling routes, people are overloaded in vehicles sometimes, as happened earlier this, or I guess it was late last year, and San Antonio, they found a tractor trailer filled with immigrants, and a number of them died. Well, same thing happens in Mexico. And this van had flipped, and we were trying to find some of the survivors. So I went over to Reynosa because most of them had been transferred to hospitals in that city, in that border city. And while we were reporting, we started running into other immigrants who were talking about being turned back bridges. We started finding immigrants who were camped out on the bridges, who were being told to come back, come back tomorrow, go stay at a church. There's a church over there. You can come back tomorrow, and being turned back time and time again. It was in the course of reporting on this other tragedy that we found out that there were these cases of people who were, at this time, actually, sorry to go back a little bit, but at this time, Trump had not yet been elected. There were still significant numbers of Central American families arriving at the border, lots of Cubans still, lots of Haitians, that really kind of precipitously dropped off after the election. It's been climbing again in recent months, but at that time, the numbers were quite high.
It shows you that what the reporting in this area, the stakes are high, that these are people's lives frequently that are in jeopardy, and you're writing about them and showing them in trying to survive. To the other question that the caller had about social media, we know that there is a role that social media is playing, particularly warning people about shootouts that are happening and other things. And then there are people, social media stars, I guess you might call them, who are in danger themselves as they report on what's happening in the streets. Aaron?
Yeah, that's correct. Most people navigate through the city. I mean, if we're talking about Reynosa, but really all of Tamaulipas, the state that is immediately south of the Rio Grande Valley, navigate with social media, Twitter, Facebook. They check to see what's going on before they, I mean, it's just a routine part of the day. Anytime you're going to go anywhere, you have to see, you know, what people are tweeting, what warnings are out there. And some very well-known, reputable people have accounts and people respect and believe the information that they're providing. But that's also, that can be very dangerous. A couple of years ago, there was a woman who was discovered, her identity was discovered, and she was disappeared. A very well-known, respected social media journalist. So the situation is precarious for all journalists.
Margo Ewan, the question that the caller had about support here in San Antonio and across the country, U.S., what can we do for reporters in Mexico to help them do their jobs?
So I would say that it's imperative to share the stories of these Mexican journalists who are risking their lives to cover the corruption and the drug trade that is plaguing and breaking their own country. I think that it's really essential to share their work, not only because it's so important and they've risked so much for it, but also because it really impacts the United States. Mexico is our southern neighbor. A lot of what these journalists are reporting on really do have direct implications on the United States and drugs that may get smuggled into our country. And also to advocate for journalists like Emilio Gutierrez and his son, who are currently being unjustly detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement in El Paso. They need as much support as they can get. The National Press Club has been outstanding in drawing attention to this issue, as well as Congressman O'Rourke. But the more voices that we have advocating for their release, the more we can make an impact in not only his case, but the broader issue of journalists in Mexico who feel like they have no option but to flee to another country to safety.
All right. I got a caller, Daniel Valles. He is a journalist and commentator based in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, a regular contributor for the Media Project. And Daniel, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Tell us about what the feeling is with the journalist community in Mexico about these deaths and safety.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me. I'm in Mexico City right now. And what I can tell you after 25 years of being a journalist and having a nationwide crusade against corruption myself, that's my main subject. I can tell you that my colleagues need to be very careful. I've been listening to the contributors that you have right now, and I agree with most of what they are saying, because we need to know how to self-censor ourselves, because dealing with this subject of the drug cartels, the corruption and the violence going on in Mexico, it is very dangerous. And it's not 11 journalists being killed, it's 12. December 19, the last one was killed, and it's not in the reports yet that Journalists Without Borders have, but it did happen. So the environment here or the mood is you need to be very cautious in what you say, how you say it. I'm always saying that you can deal with whatever the subject in the proper content and in the proper ways of saying things. Miroslava Vrish was a dear colleague and colleague of mine, and we work in the same journal, a newspaper, and she was dealing with subjects that are very deep and exposing those things. And every journalist has to make a decision of what he wants to accomplish. If you want to become a martyr,
You want to expose all the hard core of what's going on, or you for a year, 2 years, I don't know, but or you can be for a long period of time exposing and telling people what to do and how to fight these cartels. Now, the cartels, they exist because there's a big market in the United States. That is a fact. And the border is a very dangerous place to be a journalist because of all the market that goes between the borders. It's drugs going into the United States, and it's money and guns getting out of the United States. So that's something that has been happening for the past 4 years. So in order for you to do something for us in Mexico, I think that the U.S. government needs to take care of your drug problem within your borders, and that will ease the things in Mexico. Because if you have a market, you're going to have a provider, and the only place you can get into that market is through our borders. So we deal with that subject every day of our lives, and we need to be very cautious how to deal with it, because it is a very dangerous subject, as you know.
Yes, so we have the problem of demand for drugs in the United States. We have an abundance of guns in the United States. We have the ability to launder money in the United States. And this is something that is fueling the violence and turmoil in Mexico. People in the United States do have a responsibility and have to be held accountable for their role in this. And listen, so Daniel, can you hang on? I want to ask you a question when we come back from this 1 minute break. I have a question I really want to ask you to get your perspective on it. It's why do you think that journalists are being killed? It's not like people don't know that there are drug cartels, that they don't know that there's corruption. What difference does it make if reporters report or don't? And I want to hear your answer to that question when we come back from the break. Also, our phone lines are open, 210-614-8980. Other callers as well. This is The Source when we come back. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about journalists living in danger in Mexico. With me online is Daniel Valles. He's a reporter, commentator based in Ciudad, Mexico, Ciudad Juarez, and he's in DF in Mexico City right now. And so I asked you, going to break, why bother to kill journalists? I mean, isn't that just make it all the more worse if you're a cartel trying not to draw attention to yourself?
Well, your question is very important, because this is a two-head coin. On the one hand, you have people reporting what is going on, and on the other hand, you have people that are already involved with the cartels. So you can have both, and you don't know who is who if you don't want to know, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why things are happening like that. I have friends that have tried to go to the United States because of their life has been threatened because of a serious reporting and journalist job. And I have another ones that have been killed because they were involved with the cartels. So you have both sides of the coin there, and you need to, you never know. That's the main truth, because you need to really hang with them in order to know what everybody's doing. So the reputations that you need to build up are very important, and being a journalist in Mexico is one of the worst paid forms of job, and some of the colleagues they get corrupted receiving money from cartels or politicians or whoever. I mean, and that will hinder their life. And if you get one bribe, you're there, you're in, you can't go out. They will think
they will tell you either take the lead or the silver or the lead. You decide on your own.
Yeah, the silver or the lead. Yeah, and that's a decision that you need to make in the moment. So
Daniel, I got to let you go, but I appreciate you calling in. A reporter from Mexico, Ciudad Juarez, in DF at Mexico City right now, Daniel Valles, I appreciate you calling in. But I want to ask Margo Ullin, with the North American Director for Reporters Without Borders, is there a strategy? Are we trying to figure out a way to, you know, we can provide, you know, physical protection and panic buttons, all these other things, but there's got to be a reason why reporters are being killed, and is that being addressed?
So we always advise journalists to take necessary precautions when they are reporting in Mexico. And our Mexican representative, who is a journalist herself, definitely does provide that kind of advice to journalists that she's in contact with. But we, as an advocacy organization, an international advocacy organization, we play the role of drawing attention to these issues and applying pressure to Mexico's government so that that political will can be ignited, because currently it's really not present in the country in terms of combating impunity and making sure that Mexico complies with its international obligations to protect journalists. There's a very strong legal framework internationally that requires member states to prevent journalist killings and investigate those killings when they occur, but there is a very big implementation gap.
Sure, so, but if the reason why cartels or government officials are targeting journalists for their reporting is to stop the flow of information about certain things, then if there is a way to make that counterproductive by amplifying what those reporters were working on, then would that be a way to protect reporters? And Bill McCarron, from the executive director of the National Press Club, I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
I'll tell you what I would have to say, but what Mexico would say is that there is a program that's developed in Mexico to protect journalists who are at risk, who have been threatened by cartels or others. And in fact, the judge in the case of Emilio Gutierrez pointed that program out and said that there would be no danger to Emilio if he was returned because he would be part of this program. Well, some of the 12 journalists that we've been discussing earlier today that have lost their lives in Mexico were actually in this protection program, which is administered by the Mexican military. So we don't think that's an effective program. And the problem with having an apparatus like that in place is that it's something governments can point to and say, well, here's a solution. And I like your approach, David, which is to try to figure out a solution, because I don't think there is one. But I just wanted to mention this existing program, which in the case of Emilio is something that a judge, I think a well-meaning judge, is looking at this and trying to suggest that there's a reason to return him and to believe he's safe.
Now, I've been a reporter in Mexico for many years, and I always felt like my Americanism was some sort of like Iron Man's armor. It protected me in a way, but I did lose a friend of mine, Philip True, working in Mexico, and he was murdered while on the job. But can foreign correspondents play a role in trying to report about what's going on in Mexico, Bill McCarron?
I think so, because they're allowed to return and have some safety in which to write, and so they're just going in on a reporting trip. So they're not living there in certain cases. They do have an ability to shine a light. Of course, in the case of Philip True, that was a tragic case where he was working alone and in the field, and was quite far from any urban areas or any places that there could be any kind of help. The work is dangerous. It's been dangerous for a long time. But I do think that, yes, American reporters who can enter and leave and do their reporting from a place of safety, there is value there. And there's not enough of it. And I think that's it's a great area for an increase in production for us.
Aaron Nelson, that's you, buddy. You're the reporter for the San Antonio Express News in the Rio Grande Valley, going across and reporting these stories in American newspapers, frequently picked up across the country. So what do you think about your role?
Well, I do think that I have the advantage of sometimes being able to write stories that local journalists on the border are not going to write. Because of the danger that they're exposed to, because they do live in the community.
But at the same time, I'll tell you a couple of times that I've been reporting there in Reynosa with law enforcement, in fact, and I've been approached. So I don't.
Well, tell me more about that. What happened? Who approached you? How did that go down?
In one case, we were working with state police, and there was somebody within the state police, not an officer, not a person who I can identify, but who approached me about the work that I was doing, asked me where it was going to be published, and to try to get me to meet him in a private setting later after this interview. I had a fixer at the time, a local journalist, who informed me that this was a contact between the cartel and the local law enforcement. On a separate occasion, we were working on a story about checkpoints in Reynosa. Towards the end of the year, the violence was really spiking, and there were, I think, about a dozen carjackings every day until the governor decided that he was going to put in checkpoints. And we were reporting on the checkpoints. And on our way back across the bridge, we were followed by a scout, and they took photos of us. I spoke with the governor's office. We don't know what became of that, but, you know, it's enough to make you think twice. So it's just to say that we're not immune. And I wanted to go back, if I could, just
yes,
really quickly to something that Daniel was saying, is that, you know, the idea that, you know, that all of the drugs and the smuggling of people that cross the border, and the money and the guns that go south of the border, and then this idea that a wall could stop it, I think that many people still don't realize that there are hundreds of miles of border wall already in place, and the border has not gotten less volatile in that time. If anything, places like Reynosa and Matamoros are as bad as they've ever been. And if you listen to law enforcement, they would argue that if you put these barriers in place, that it will push out these smuggling operations. But if that were the case, then you would have less violence in these communities, and you don't. You have probably about as much violence as you've ever had. And in fact, experts will tell you that you need to have this buildup of law enforcement to make these enterprises as lucrative as they are. So if anything, one might argue that it's incentivizing more violence.
Okay. Real quickly, I'm like, we're 30 seconds. Margo, you and North American Director for Reporters Without Borders. I mean, it's not just Mexico. We know that Central America, like Honduras, has also got these problems. They just don't have the raw numbers to draw our attention. But this is happening, you know, in Central America as well. Give me a 10 seconds reaction to that.
So the incidents that occur in Mexico are certainly not isolated, as you said. The drug violence, the cartel violence, does spill across many different countries in Central and South America. And journalists that cover corruption in countries that even are not involved in this drug cartel situation are also daily risking their lives.
Right.
And that's not even just in the Americas region. That's worldwide, as we saw with the murder.
Absolutely. We're out of time. Margo, thank you so much. North American Director for Reporters Without Borders, Bill McCarron with the National Press Club, Aaron Nelson, San Antonio Express News. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.